Vile indeed are the inhabitants of those noxious cattle kraals. London, Liverpool, New York, Chicago, New Orleans. And yet in those places is heaped up the golden plunder of the world. Ethnographers of the very highest authority assert that over 10,000 years ago, the black, white, and yellow types of men-animal were as pronounced and as ineffaceable as they are today. The hieroglyphics and records of ancient tombs and monuments, cuneiform inscriptions, antiquarian researches, and the systematic study of prehistoric skulls and skeletons all bear the same uniform testimony. Inequality of birth and condition can never perish off the earth. Never. And why should it? Who can fill the valleys up and lay the mountains low? 9. Even the giddy doctrinaire who so cunningly concocted the Bombasto Furioso fictions of the Declaration could not apparently have believed them himself. Was he not a slave driver, residing among slave drivers, who bought and anchored human cattle for dollars and cents all the days of his life? No doubt for purposes of statecraft and necessary warcraft, he wove his philosophic preamble of strong deceit. Probably also, he was comparatively honest and even sincere, but among the alluring priests of unreason, the most dangerous is the fanatical propagandist. When Jefferson dictated his fatal and untenable abstraction, he was not even original, but plagiarized Zeno the Stoic, Jack Cade, Savonarola, Milton, Plato, John Ball, etc. Zeno said, all men are by nature equal, but carefully refrained from attempting to demonstrate it. Milton defended it in his prose essays. Plato voiced it in his Republic. John Ball preached it in medieval England. Savonarola perished trying to establish it in Florence. Jack Cade, Robespierre, and Christ were also failures. Ghastly failures. If human experience proves anything at all, writes James Fitzjames Stevens, it proves that if the restraints are minimized, if the largest possible measure of liberty is accorded to all human beings, the result will not be equality, but inequality, reproducing itself in a geometrical ratio. Remove the restraints and see how quickly an aristocracy based on merit would mow down an aristocracy based on credit. In actual life, he who claims equality with another is ever called upon to prove his claim, not by a grotesque abracadabra of silly phrases, parroted from antique philosophers or blue moldy documents, but by actual deeds. That is to say, by producing his credentials. Constitutional theories are all very well to humbug stridulating slaves, but in a free man's household or business they are not legal tender. Among men of affairs, natural egalitarianism is regarded as amusing moonshine, mere spread egoism, fit for public meetings only. Business minds thoroughly understand, having learnt by bitter experience, that some men are destined by nature to bear command and some to obey, aye, even for 1,000 years before their birth. No one can study the laborers on a farm, the hands in a big foundry or factory, the seamen in a large seaport, the nomadic hirelings on a railroad construction gang, or the clerks and salesmen in a city warehouse without perceiving at a glance that the vast majority of them are extremely poor specimens of humanity. The ideal type of manhood or womanhood, that is to say, ye thoroughbred, is not to be found among these captive hordes, for captives they really are. Their heads are to a large extent unsymmetrical, their features distorted, ape-like, unintelligent. Their bodies are out of all proportion, dwarfed, stunted, diseased, malformed, cretinous. Their movements are contracted, artificial, ungainly, and their minds, outside of routine, are utter vacuums. When compared with the traditional idea of strength, beauty, courage, and nobleness of character, they are an extremely ill-bred herd of cattle, exhibiting all the psychological stigmata of inherited rain rot and of physical decay. A crown of thorns on every brow, that is the wage they're earning now. 9/10 of them are positively repulsive in language, mentality, and in general appearance. They even display an extraordinary low average of animality, and upon the slightest exposure perish off, like sheep that have the lungworm. Heated rooms, woolen clothing, and stimulating beverages are the means whereby their watery blood is kept in languid circulation. Every new generation is feebler and more debased than its predecessor. All the scientific evidences of mental, moral, and bodily deterioration are markedly accentuated in them. Their timidity is proverbial. Hard, continuous, methodical labor destroys courage, saps vitality, and demoralizes character. It tames and subdues men. Just as it tames and subdues the wild steer or the young colt, men who labor hard and continuously have no power to think. It requires all their vital force to keep their muscles in trim. Indeed, the civilized city working man and working woman are the lowest and worst type of animal ever evolved from dust and slime and oxygen. They actually worship work and bow down before law as an ox team crouches and strains under the lash. Look upon their shrunken cheeks, their thin, decayed teeth, sharp, puny noses, small, watery eyes, yellow, bloodless complexions, bent shoulders, dry hair tending to baldness, struggling thin beard, the women with pinched features, waspish, fragile waists, want of bust development, consumptive, neurotic, artificially barren, emaciated, hungry, dwarfed, hysterical. The minds of average workmen and workwomen are either total vacuums or stuffed to the brim with every conceivable species of lies, iniquity, superstition, and sham. Indeed, how could they remain in such conditions of base, loathsome hirelingism? Were they not deficient in all the primitive virtues, in all that is manly or womanly? Behold, upon their brow is stamped with red-hot cattle brands the word damned. Eternally tortured are they in a patent purgatory invented by politicians. Their tribulations, however, may really be but progression in disguise, because their shameful self-degradation must ultimately end in their utter extinguishment. Hopelessly are they entangled in the snare, hopelessly defeated. For them there is no escape. No, not even through fields of blood. Poor trembling wretches, washing their own hands in their own sweat, nay, in their own hearts as blood, born thralls are they, or born madmen. Their days are without hope, and their years are consumed for naught. When their masters speak unto them, there is trembling in all their joints. They waste their lives pursuing shadows, and for hire build their own tombs. Their minds are below freezing point, nay, below zero, crippled souls are they. They knead their own flesh into daily bread, and transmute their contrite hearts into basins of gruel. They look unto idols for deliverance, aye, and grind their dry bones into baskets of coal. At thoughts of battle, they blench with terror. At the sight of naked bayonets, they run like whipped hounds. Therefore strength leapeth down upon them as the panther leaps upon his quarry, and in a moment of time they are blotted out. My soul abhorreth them as an abomination. My hand reacheth out to clutch them by the throat. A people that deliberately enters upon a gigantic war in order to firmly establish a centralized despotism, and at the same time reduce itself to the social level of the Negro, the Russian Jew, the coolie, the Chinaman, and the European serf, must indeed, to use a suggestive vernacularism, have wheels in its head. The man and brother lie has certainly succeeded in writing itself in a constitutional amendment, but in real life it is as far from actuality as ever it was. The free Negro of New Orleans or Charleston is a more degraded, more despised being, and of less money value to his proprietors now than when it was customary to buy and sell him at the auction block instead of as at present on the stock exchange. What the late Civil War really accomplished was to degrade the white slave to the lower level of the plantation nigger, and in that respect it was a triumph of ingenuity. The whites actually fought each other to demonetize themselves. Equality! Equality! What brilliant deeds have been perpetrated in thy name! Lincoln, however, was he not a great statesman? Decidedly he was. Well, indeed, he knew how to round up the herd with bewitching phrases. Hark! Do you hear those drunken slaves caterwauling down the street? Lo, it is election night. Hurrah, hurrah, they sing. We'll sound the jubilee. Glory be to Lincoln, the man who made us free. In Morocco, the eunuchs and other menials bless their fate and the prince at the very time he condescends to cut their throats with his own hands. Americans, however, are a free-born people, not to be duped that way. Throughout both northern and southern states, the social chasm between the highest and lowest human organisms, whether white or black and tan, is even more pronounced now than ever it was previously. For example, although the Negroes are a majority in many states, they are never permitted to attain actual administrative power, and they never shall. You cannot paint the Negro white with laws and constitutions, though you write it in fire and smoke of wars and revolutions. To solemnly proclaim that all men are created equal is as stupid and unscientific as to assert that all dogs, cattle, apes, and trees are created equal. Are there not as many diverse varieties of dogs, cattle, apes, and trees as there are of men, planets, germs, stars, and suns? Where then is the intrinsic equality between an oak tree and a currant bush? Between a meddlesome wolfhound and a yelping street cur? Between a buffalo bull and a hand-fed steer? Between an untamable gorilla of the woods and an organ grinder's castrated monkey? Between a cosmic trained Bismarck and that famous Christling, the good young man that died? Cannot a blooded bulldog whip a solid score of lean half-starved street mongrels? Upon exactly the same principle, a small body of bold, self-reliant, brainy men are ever more than a match, under any circumstances, for 10,000, nay, 10,000,000 greasy mechanics. What is a mechanic anyhow but a specially trained slave? And it would take the spirit of 1,000 American slaves to make that of one live man. Theoretically, all these organisms are of the same species, but in the savage rush for bread, love, space, and life, there is as much functional difference between them as there is between a Royal Bengal tiger and Mary's little lamb. The lamb was made to be eaten, and the tiger was made to eat it, and man was born to struggle as the sparks fly upwards. The necessities of environment make of each man the enemy or rival of other men, more especially those with whom he comes in direct personal conflict. Where then does equality come in? It does not come in at all. It is an idiotic myth. There must always be a substratum of victimized organisms. How could the tiger live if there were no victims to devour? How could there be heroes if there were no slaves? How could there be great nations if there were no contemptible ones? Compare the noble qualities inherent in some dogs with the obsequious virtues that distinguish 9 men out of 10. Now give to canine or homo equal liberty of action, equal opportunity, equal rights, and what will be the result? Must not the fiercest fighter fatten while the skeletons of lean weaklings project through their scrofulous hides? What power originating among themselves could dictate and enforce equality of opportunity? Socialism, Christianism, democratism, equalityism are really the whining yelpings of base-bred mongrel multitudes. They howl aloud for state intervention, protection for suffering humanity, regulated mill grinding, as it were, with the state to be their supreme idol, their god and master, their all in all, their great panjandrum. Poor, deluded, base-spirited weeds. Truly the curse of God is in the very marrow of their bones, in every pump stroke of their dying hearts. The man who prays to be protected by politicians, guarded by armed janissaries, saved by idolatrous priests, and redeemed by state regimentation is indeed a miserable sinner, a vile, despicable, unmanly wretch. 12. No paternalistic governmental mechanism, however theoretically perfect, can ever keep the base-born and well-born, the thoroughbreds and the hybrids, in a state of perpetual equilibrium. You might as well try to bind down an earthquake with hoop iron as to rule the strong with "be it enacted." "Be it enacted" were invented only to frighten captives with. What power on earth can permanently keep the Negro on a parity with the Anglo-Saxon? The strong must have their way in spite of all puritanical proscribings, all mock moralisms, all degrading legalisms, all constitutional covenantings. Neither the machinery nor the raw material of equality has ever existed, only the dream, the idea of it. Equality, equality. In that one word is summed up the accumulated dementia of 2,000 years. The thought of it was born in the brain of an inferior organism, and the brains of the inferior organisms nourish it still. How can beings who for ages have been born and bred to toil and subjectivity ever comprehend the feelings of those who are freeborn and of valorous descent, of those who understand the cosmic law that might is master? You cannot muzzle a tempest with a cobweb, bridle a volcano with a shoestring, bottle up a cyclone in a powder horn, nor catch a tidal wave with a boat hook. Neither can you put a bit between the teeth of the strong. They will see you in Sheol first. No artificial plan of society, no pious incantations, however sincere and well-intentioned, can ever prevent the pot that is of iron from smashing and sinking the pot that is of clay. And why should it? If social equilibrium had been feasible, it would have been established ages and ages ago. It has never been established, and it never shall. What then is the good of eternally dreaming, theorizing, and constructing phantom castles in the air, cities of God and gardens of delight upon foundations of deliberate unveracity? Let us be men, whole men, not clamorous, tearful little children demanding infantile sugar plums. Let us face the fierce, challenging facts of existence as boldly as our forefathers did before a Christly comfort and consolation was introduced to unman them. Not like crouching, cringing, terrorized Oriental pariahs. Let us not be lured to wholesale annihilation by sonorous Asiatic evangelisms that have proved themselves worthless and unsuitable to our temperament, our climate, and our breed. Let us be sensible, brave, practical, and, as Virchow somewhat trenchantly recommends, accept things as they truly are, not as we choose to imagine them. Or rather, as they have been imagined by dotard philosophers, daft poets, and castrated clerics. 13. The problem that we are ever called upon to solve or be eaten up is not how to make life happy and equal, for happiness is a moving mirage, and equality an impossibility, but how men may conquer their opportunities, surpass their rivals, extirpate their pursuers. The race is still to the swift and the battle to the strong. Beauty and booty are always the prerogatives of victorious valor. Woe unto the outgeneraled ones. 'Tis a battle for bread, for love, and for breath. 'Tis a race for life to the jaws of death. Upon the island of Java, there is a remarkable valley of death. It is literally strewed with the bones and skulls and skeletons of immeasurable dead animals and creeping things. In the due season, giant turtles, 5 foot by 3 in diameter, travel up through it from the sea to lay their eggs. En route, they are set upon by packs of wild dogs, and these dogs roll the turtles upon their backs and then devour them alive by tearing out their unprotected entrails. When the dogs are gorged, they, in their turn, fall an easy prey to ambushing tigers. Then hunters kill those tigers for their variegated skins. Rank grass springs up after the rainy season through all the skulls and bones that this little tropical Golgotha and droves of cattle gather there to fatten. Again, the cattle are hunted for their hides, horns, and flesh, and their bones are also left where they fall, to manure the valley and prepare it for new generations of hunters and hunted. Such is in miniature a picture of the everyday world as it actually is. All living beings are pursuing and being pursued. Woe unto those that stumble. Woe unto ye who fall. They who accept the equality, faith, hope, and charity ideal, in any shape or form whatever, interpret the facts of mortal life as they are not, as they have ever been, as they can never be. Indeed, when the animal world becomes moralized and equalized, it will be extinct. No doubt, when contemplating the dark side of all this, Pascal was impelled to write with superstitious medieval diapason, I am affrighted like a man who in his sleep has been carried unto some horrible desert island, and there awakes, not knowing where he is, nor how he shall escape. Degenerates only are thus affrighted at the tragic majesty of the surroundings. If this struggle is ordained of us, why not enter into it with kingly courage, with dauntless delight? Why not go forward, daring all things, to conquer or to die? Is it not better to perish than to serve? Liberty or death is not a meaningless phrase. No, it is of tremendous import to those who comprehend. What is death that it should make cowards of us all? What is life that it should be valued so highly? There are worse things than death among them. A life of dishonor. All men lead dishonorable lives who serve a master, with hand or brain. Life itself is but a spark in the gloom that flashes out and disappears. Why, therefore, not make the most of it here and now? Here and now.